Relentless Roger and the Caveman Doctor, Episode 44. Today we ask, is it time to take control of your health? Can a magic exercise circuit get you fit in 7 minutes per day? And are you part of the lunatic fringe? Relentless Roger and the Caveman Doctor, Episode 44. I am Relentless Roger here with Dr. Colin Champ, the Caveman Doctor. What's up, man?
Doing well. Was in the Berg over the weekend, celebrating, a little late, but celebrating my grandfather's 96th birthday. And I moved a bunch of my stuff over. Checked out my apartment. It's going to happen.
Not excited about it.
Yeah, I've mixed feeling. You know, it was good. I actually ate at a restaurant right next to my apartment, and they had venison.
Nice.
That was a good sign. Pushed a car yesterday with my brother.
Did you?
So, yeah.
Oh, that's good.
So, I'm pretty sore. And
We have to do that before you leave.
Yeah. Down Walnut. In the middle. Or Market.
In the middle of the day. We'll strategically time it so we get it out when a bunch of cars are at a red light.
Yeah.
And then we'll just be pushing.
Push a cab.
We'll claim that it's died. And we'll get a good solid work at it.
Let's get Seth to videotape it.
That'd be
amazing. Yeah. The funny part is my brother and I were sitting in it, and my brother's wife was pushing the car. And these guys in a really big truck with lawnmowers on the back pulled up and stopped. And they said, oh, do you guys need help? And then they kind of gave us this look like, why is she pushing the car while you two are sitting in there? And then the other guy's like, oh, you're training. So it was good. And then my other...
See nice people, man.
Yeah, see nice people in Pittsburgh, exactly. And then the other thing is today... In my hospital that I work in, they handed out free ice cream.
Ooh.
Ice cream sandwich, anything you wanted in the hospital.
So what'd you have?
I was in utter shock. So, you know, when the hospital's handing that out, that pretty much signifies where our healthcare system is.
Even gyms, you know,
yeah.
They have pizza for members day and all sorts of crazy stuff.
Yeah, we have what's called tumor boards or multidisciplinary tumor boards where a surgeon, a medical oncologist, a radiation oncologist, and the radiologist come. They always buy pizza for everyone.
Yep.
And I complain about it every week.
It's standard practice,
yeah.
Right?
Yep.
It's the everything. It's the go-to for everything. It's the go-to for if a boss wants to do something nice for employees, pick up some pizza or junk food, right? If a client or a patient wants to do something nice for a doctor or a trainer or anything like that, it's bring in a tray of cookies or bring in, you know, this, that, or the other. If we want to celebrate an office worker's birthday party, if we want to celebrate a wedding, if we want to celebrate New Year's, if we want to celebrate Christmas, it's the go-to for everything.
Very unfortunate.
Yeah.
Very unfortunate. What's up with you? Enough of my complaints.
So on Friday night at Relentless Fitness, we had the Top Dog Challenge, which was
awesome.
A blast. It's funny. It's easy to forget when you haven't done it for a little while. We try to do it twice a year. So this was actually the second ever. We had done our first one last October, November. And it's easy to forget just how inspirational it is to see a bunch of people really getting after it, especially in the community environment that's been built there. And it's really nice to see people come in and get after it. There were a decent amount of friends and other clients just coming out to spectate and cheer people on. And you come out of a night like that really fired up and really happy. You know, I was really happy to be doing what I was doing. I think everyone on the Relentless team was really happy. And
did you have pizza for everyone?
We did not. We did not. But it was really exciting to see people pushing their limits. You know, it was a sequence of 10 challenges, anything from suicide sprints to flexed arm hang above a bar to, you know, squat thrust, different things like that. So it was a lot of varied challenges, and congratulations to Eric Fox, who walked away with the Top Dog belt.
Nice.
And the cool thing is, you know, I'm big into mixed martial arts and boxing, and really no one else on the team is, so I'm kind of alone in this. But our champion from last October, November, unfortunately has a thankfully minor knee injury, but she definitely could not compete this time around. So I'm excited because next Top Dog Challenge in October will unify the belt holders.
Oh, awesome.
But I think I'm the only one who gets that reference. So, you know.
Well, I won't be around for that, so.
Hey, maybe you'll come in that weekend.
Yeah.
It'll be a good time.
All right, well, let's get us started here. I think you have a pretty big article.
I do. So I heard this from many different angles, and most importantly, the angle from a lot of my everyday clients. I had someone today who I was training, and I started to get in my own workout after we were done, and she kind of ran back through the gym and said, hey, just wanted to make sure you heard about this New York Times article. And I said I had, and I've actually heard about it from multiple sources. So New York Times was the mainstream piece that published it, but it's really coming from the American College of Sports Medicine Journal. And the article is entitled High-Intensity Circuit Training Using Bodyweight, Maximum Results with Minimal Investment. How it's been talked about in mainstream media is this magic 7-minute circuit that encompasses 12 exercises. And that you can, you know, you can get this amazing bang for your buck, and all you have to do is work out for 7 minutes, right?
Wait a minute. Is it 7-minute abs?
right. So of course, you know, leave it to the mainstream media to take an article and to position it like that, right? Mm. I actually am gonna, especially if you're listening to us and listening to this podcast, I'm actually going to recommend that anyone who's remotely interested in exercise read this study. Okay. It's not the most technical study. Your eyes will not glaze over. What this study does, and what I try and do with a lot of my clients, and especially the people who come through the transformation, is give out sort of an exercise 101. I like to talk about, you know, without getting into elite athlete training or anything like that, there are fundamentals to personal training, very simple fundamentals, that I take for granted, but I know I really shouldn't take for granted. And I know that you may not be aware of some of these. I think this study does a fantastic job of literally going through several fundamentals. The principle of, you know, metering out rest between exercises. The principle of using large muscle compound movements. The principle of, in a circuit format like this with minimal rest, using and rotating between opposing muscle groups so as not to, you know, completely fatigue something out. I think there's a lot in here that a layman can take a look through, get a lot out of it, not have their eyes glaze over, and be better off for it. All right. But I want to address now the media perspective. Okay. So the media perspective is magic circuit takes 7 minutes, encompasses 12 exercises.
Anytime they put in the word magic.
Right, exactly.
You know, you're in trouble.
Exactly. And of course, and you'll hear they're talking about a lot of markers of health, improving a lot of different things. You know, nothing foreign from what we talk about on this very podcast. We talk all the time about how, you know, intense training can improve anything from your mitochondria all the way up to your body composition, right? Mm-hmm. And really everything in between. So this is not saying anything different than that. Going down to the exercise selection, the exercise order, what they actually are saying is, you know, you can go through this circuit once, twice, or even three times, depending on how much time you have allotted. So it's not necessarily saying, you know, in 7 minutes, you're going to revolutionize your life. You know, the exercises go through, I'll give it to you real quick. Jumping jacks, wall sit, push up, crunch, step up on a chair, squat, tricep dip, plank, high knees are running in place, lower body lunge, push up and rotation, and a side plank. All right, those are the 12 exercises.
Okay.
Now, what I want to say is there's nothing magical about these exercises. I think these guys did a nice job. They clearly wanted to put together a workout where people who were time crunched and people who didn't necessarily have any equipment lying around could get a very effective workout in. And for that, I agree. I think it is pretty effective. However, there's nothing magical about these exercises. So don't read into the New York Times and think, I need to do exactly these 12 things in exactly this order, in exactly this way, because that's just not true. For example, there's absolutely zero direct back work in this workout, okay? So if you had something as simple as a bar and you were capable of chin-ups, or a resistance band for rows, dumbbells for rows, anything to get a back element into this, you would improve these 12 exercises. So I just want to say, great work by these guys. Nicely put together study. using layman's terms, so I think it's accessible to anyone. Anyone can read it and grasp some 101 exercise principles. I suggest you do that. But it can be improved on. And one way I would suggest improving upon it is if you have equipment at the ready for some sort of row or overhead pull down, I would definitely add in some back work.
Nice. So do you have to have a VCR to participate? No, yeah, I mean, you've hit on this plenty of times in the past. Like, do very intense exercises in a short amount of time, and it's probably going to help you.
Yeah. The other, actually, I do want to say the other thing I really like about this, as you know, and a lot of people who have been listening to this podcast for a long time, I've talked about a type of workout that I run called FUN, Freeform Unique Nonstop. Now, it's no different from, you know, again, there's no genius in that, right? That's just my branding of some fundamental workout concepts.
Man, give yourself some credit. There's a lot of genius in
well,
that.
Well, but I'm saying it's not like, you know, I didn't build Rome here, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm taking workout principles and I'm creating a structure so that someone can take it home and do something with it. When I was reading through this, you know, one of the things they talk about in the study is not having to do quote-unquote cardio to get cardiovascular impact. And I think that's a huge takeaway from this, right?
Yeah.
They're stringing together 12 exercises with limited rest in between to get cardiovascular impact while you're working strength. It's exactly one of the principles behind the FUN workouts that I do. So maybe we should make that the takeaway to this, that if there is some magic in it, it's that you don't need to slog away doing an hour and a half worth of jogging. In fact, a workout like this that's well constructed and keeps you working consistently can get you better, more effective cardiovascular work.
Yeah, I agree. I think the key here is that if it gets you to do high intensity exercise, which is a lot of people's issue. I was thinking about it today walking around the gym. There's so many women that and men that just chug away at this slow, dreary pace on the treadmill or the elliptical machine, and I know they're not reaching the goals they want to. And it's even if you have to trick yourself to get your level that high, which this may be doing, you know, it keeps you guessing, you jump from one exercise to the other, whatever you need to do to get that activity level up high. I mean, that's the key here.
Whatever works.
And if it's 8 minute abs, it's 8 minute abs. So.
if we need to, I suppose, you know, if we need to call it magic for someone to do it, then that's fine. But for those of you who are listening to this podcast, I prefer to try to drop a little extra education, just the fact that, you know, the magic here isn't necessarily where it's being said. Right, the magic is in fundamentals that can really be taken from this workout and applied elsewhere as well.
Absolutely.
Cool.
All right, moving on. So we discussed hair color a couple weeks ago as a side note. But now main article. So this is an article. I will put the link. It is called Red Hair Pigment Might Raise Melanoma Risk. And this is basically a study. This is from Mass General Hospital. And the interesting thing here, basically they found that when they took red furred mice, they developed melanoma. And so everyone knows melanoma. This is the what's known as the sun-dependent cancer, even though there's pretty poor data linking the two. And a lot of melanomas are actually arise in non-sun areas. Actually, Bob Marley died from a melanoma. It's called a lentigo maligna, which is on the soles of your feet and the palms of your hands. So areas that never even get sun. So there's some inconsistencies here, some things we haven't figured out yet. So these scientists looked at why do red-haired mice, and this will obviously eventually be extrapolated to red-haired humans, get higher rates of melanoma. And everyone knows that red hair, pale-skinned individuals are very sensitive to the sun. So you just kind of assume if you're getting more sunburns, which we know are bad, we've discussed this at length. It's questionable how bad the sun is, but sunburns are bad. They're inflammation, whatnot. So basically, they found that red-furred mice develop these melanomas even if they're not exposed to any ultraviolet radiation. And about 10% of mice without red fur contract melanoma. So there's something here. And when you pull out the sun, they're still getting the melanoma. So what's going on? They think it is actually this pheomelanin, which is part of the red, what gives the red hair the redness. And it might actually create some reactive oxygen species. These are free radicals. And it might do some other, and it might actually sop up some antioxidants that would be used to prevent free radical damage. So, interesting study. The take home here, one of the primary authors says, I want to emphasize that we strongly believe ultraviolet UV is a contributor to melanoma, and UV may actually amplify this red pigment phenomenon. It is still absolutely crucial for people to avoid sun exposure.
Wow.
Yeah, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's rough. This reminds me of two things. First, the lighthearted one. I don't know if you remember some podcast episodes ago, I told that sunburn story where my friend some years ago in Jamaica, red-haired Irishman, just went out and decided that he didn't want to use sunscreen and just got absolutely destroyed. So on a lighthearted note, it made me chuckle about that. The other side is what we talked about before. We talked a bunch about sun, I think a couple episodes back, and then the one after that as well. It's looking at one aspect, right? Mm-hmm. One aspect of sun exposure. And I think this is the same thing we see in certain studies that look at just cardiovascular risk or just something else, and not, like we talk about a lot, all-cause mortality, and then in this case, the plethora of benefits that you can get from the sun.
Yeah, I think the key here is if you're pale-skinned and you're more sensitive, you're going to burn easier, then you just do smaller doses.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, you know, adjust to you as a unique individual. And
just an interesting article, another one that kind of takes the target off of the sun. As we discussed several weeks ago, the sun actually has a lot of benefits, including decreases in almost every type of cancer.
Yep.
So do not avoid all sun exposure, like this article says, potentially even if you're a redhead.
Yeah. Yeah, I like what you said, that if you are a redhead, you know, change your approach to the sun, you know?
Absolutely. So what do you got?
Very lighthearted one. So I'm sure at least some people listening to this have seen this article in one way, shape, or form. This is another one that I got hit from multiple angles. But it is coming from the Raw story, and it is, a 105-year-old woman says eating bacon every day is her key to long life. So, you know, it's just one of those silly articles that made a media outlet, which is nice. She said, quote, "I love bacon. I eat it every day. I don't feel as old as I am." And then she concluded by saying, "I love bacon. I could eat it for every meal, and I do."
So, that's an amazing quote.
It cracked me up. It was interesting. And, you know, hey, bacon could use a piece of positive press, because it doesn't get him that often.
I think if this were the reverse situation, she did not eat any bacon or meat at all, this would be maybe the New York Times.
Or... this would make everything. Yeah. But hey, I think this is a good time to reiterate our stance on bacon. You want to take the bull by the horns?
I had bacon for lunch today. It was delicious. We're all about well-sourced bacon, so, you know, nitrate-free. Though even the nitrate thing now is up in the air. But, you know, we don't do smoked, uncured, kind of, or nitrate-free, like we said. And then, I don't know, there's even questions about the organic versus... I think the important thing is animals that are, obviously there's the other animal aspect, the ethical aspect of it as well, but I think at Whole Foods, they're generally, any product there is non-crowding, there's no cages, but ideally, you know, organically, no antibiotics, although I think they're not allowed to use antibiotics or hormones with pork products.
Right. But generally speaking, non-factory farm bacon. Yeah. Well taken care of animals, that kind of thing. I mean, if you can walk down the street anywhere to a farm and see their best practices and source your bacon from there, I mean, we're all about it in that instance, you know. Yeah. And then every degree you separate yourself from the bacon, so to speak, I think it gets a little trickier.
The bacon at the farmer's market here, they use nitrates.
Yeah.
So you always got to ask. You never know.
Yeah,
don't assume
true.
Just because it's from a local farm.
Right, right.
Like you said, go and check it out.
Yeah. But if you see it with your own eyes and you can, you know, you can see that the animals are relatively happy and being taken care of and those kinds of things, I think you're doing yourself a big big service.
All right. I have my next article here. This is from an open access journal, so you can read the whole thing. It's fairly interesting. It's Trends in U.S. Home Food Preparation and Consumption, Analysis of National Nutrition Surveys and Time Use Studies from the 1965 to 1966 to 2007-2008. This is a nutrition journal. Basically, they wanted to look at the differing trends in people that are cooking at home versus getting pre-made meals versus eating out, etc. So, I mean, I think it's fairly obvious what the answer is going to be. But nonetheless, an interesting article. They used databases here, so of course there's going to be, they use that NHANE, the Haines. This is where actually several studies have come from, but this is 38,500 individuals, six nationally represented cross-sectional nutrition surveys. So this has all the limits that we always talk about with these epidemiologic studies. But it showed the proportion of men, this is interesting, the men who cooked from 1965 to 66 was 29%. This has increased to 42% in 2007-2008.
Wow.
So more men are cooking, so that's a good thing. And those who cooked spent, used to be 37.4 minutes per day. This is now up to 45 minutes per day cooking. So that's actually pretty good. I think you and I do more than that. But, and then for women, cooking declined. This was 92%. So 90% of women cooked in the 60s. This is now down to 68%. So it's quite a drop. And that's 2007 to 2008. And the time spent in the kitchen went from 112.8 minutes to 65.6 minutes. So that's okay. Almost cut in half. And, you know, I think the time spent in there, a drop makes sense as technology has advanced. You think it would be less time. But interestingly enough, looking at, they looked at low income, high income, et cetera, but looking at all income groups showed significant declines throughout of 35 to 36 minutes per day. That's quite a decline. Over, everyone's cooking over a half hour less per day. And these are replaced by, you know, like I said, pre-prepared meals or going out to eat. What are your thoughts?
Not surprised. I actually was, I thought that's where it would end up going. But when you started with the male statistics, I was thinking, wow, okay, all right.
Yeah, that's an interesting twist. It's obvious that everyone's cooking less, but it's interesting that men are cooking more.
Yeah, I think you're definitely seeing gender equality play a role, which is important. Mm-hmm. But on the whole, you kind of hammered home the last statistic, which is that all of our
people
time in the kitchen.
Less.
Yeah, exactly. People are cooking less, which is, you know, what I would expect. I actually maybe would have expected a little bit more of a drop.
Yeah.
I guess maybe I'm a doomsayer, right? But
I was thinking about that as well, but cooking or eating out all your meals per day.
Yeah.
That's pretty, to not cook at home at all is pretty tough to do.
Yeah, but I know plenty of people who cook at home for one meal a day.
Yeah.
Period. And think doing more than that is ridiculous.
Yeah, it says here overall that 65 to 72% of total daily energy came from home supply type foods, so non-cooking. So it is a fair majority.
Okay.
Scary, scary stuff.
But something that any of us can change really in the snap of a finger.
Why cook when you get free ice cream at your local hospital?
So. Right.
Anyway, all right, last but not least, this is just a shout out to Roger, a very quick article.
To me?
This is a shout out to you, my friend. This is a study that looked at the nurses' health study. So this is the group that they do so many, the red meat, all these things. It's just a huge cohort of patients that were followed for tons of years. And they surveyed 2,000 men for sleep patterns. Basically, they found that those that had difficulty falling asleep, staying asleep, falling back asleep if they woke during the night, basically those that are not sleeping as much, have a two-fold increased risk of not only getting prostate cancer, but getting more aggressive prostate cancer. So it's, you know, I think a lot of this goes back to melatonin being an antioxidant. You know, we've discussed this at length, but all signs are pointing to get your sleep while you can.
Yeah, man.
Going back to that, you can eat well and exercise and do all these healthy things, but if you're not sleeping well, you are nipping that aspect of healthcare in the bud. So sleep better.
Get your sleep
better. Yeah. Is that time? Tangible takeaways?
Tangible takeaways.
All right, why don't you lead us off?
All right, exercise, tangible takeaway. This actually plays right into, this happens often, man. We're sometimes on the same karmic wavelength,
yeah.
Right? But I want to talk about what if you don't like exercise, right? And so you alluded to this before with, hey, sometimes a workout structure like the magical one that we talked about earlier helps people, you know, maybe not think so much about what they're doing. And sometimes that changing in between exercises and activities really helps the mind out and allows them to accomplish more. In this case, this weekend, I'm going to be doing an adventure race along with another trainer at Relentless and some clients, and it should be a lot of fun. But what inevitably will be a part of that adventure race is a whole heck of a lot of movement, sometimes in sprint fashion, because we're going to be running around the city and potentially at different stops doing different kinds of activity. So even though when we get clues and are figuring out, so this style race, you get clues, you have to figure out where to go, go there, and then complete a challenge, and then get another clue and go somewhere else and complete a challenge. As we're doing this, the last thing that's going to be on my mind is getting a good workout. But I can guarantee you, by the end of this race, I'm going to have a really good workout in the bag, right?
Yeah.
So in this case, this is really hiding and masking a great workout. So to piggyback off what you said earlier and the fact that I'm doing an adventure race this weekend, hey, if you don't like exercise, that's okay. I think a lot of people are in the same boat as you, but it's valuable to a certain extent. So hide it, mask it, find certain ways to package it up that, you know, works better for your mentality, and just at least get that little minimum bit in per week versus staying sedentary.
It's like salt and pepper in your food.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good stuff. My big workout takeaway is I've been squatting a lot more, and it's great. It's such a great work. You know, there's back squats. I did front squats for quite a while, and I've switched it back. So far so good. It's just, you know, there's certain workouts that really cut to the core, and the squat's one of them. I mean, it just works so many muscles. It's such a total body workout. And there's certain lifts where you just feel totally wiped out afterwards, and it's hard to feel as wiped out as you do after squatting. So, good article here. I'm struggling. A good article here by Brett Contreras, 7 Reasons to Squat Like a Man. I'm going to say 7 Reasons to Squat Like a Man or Woman, because I think both men and women should squat. But I'll link this on here. Squatting increases glute activity, which makes sense. It increases hip extension torque, which makes sense as well. Squatting deep increases lumbopelvic stabilization requirements. You know, these are muscles that you can't just not work out or shut off. It transfers better to a vertical jump. They lead to greater post-activation potentiation, and they lead to a better job at increasing thigh hypertrophy. So for all you out there that are trying to gain some muscle mass. And deep squats do a better job at increasing squat strength to parallel depth, and that makes sense as well. So I'm going to link this article. Check it out. And then I'm also going to link an article. It's a really good article. It's called 6 Truths About Squats. It's by Lee Boyce, and it goes through the different ways to squat. I mean, obviously, anytime we're saying to do some workout here, make sure you're doing it right.
Yeah.
There's no point to do a great workout if you're not doing it the way that makes it great.
I just want to say, you can't really replicate the back squat without throwing weight up on yourself. I think that's kind of Captain Obvious, but I do like another squat out there. It's a different motion. It's called the Bulgarian split squat, but I think it's perfect for example, myself, I have a little bit of natural lower back spinal curvature, and motions like the back squat and motions like straight bar deadlift inevitably get my lower back.
Yeah.
I can focus on form until the cows come home. But if I go heavy enough and I do enough reps, I'm going to feel some consequences. And so what I've decided is to, you know, try to get a lot of those benefits, but using different style motions. So for example, what I've changed my straight bar deadlift to is the trap bar deadlift. And it's like night and day when it comes to my lower back. And for the back squat, what I like is the Bulgarian split squat, which again, it can't replicate having the weight on top of you. But Bulgarian split squat is where you throw your rear leg up on any bench and you take a long stride out and you're squatting down on one leg at a time. And in terms of the lower body work aspect of it, I think it's a great replicator.
Absolutely. It's a good lift. So check these out. The second article goes through all these things, low bar versus high bar, foot width, all these different manipulations and different ways that your form can vary. So check it out.
I like it.
All right.
Time for some food, some nutrition, a nutrition takeaway. I've been excited to, and now I'm going to open myself up to all sorts of Dr. Champ criticism here. Maybe some jokes are coming my way, but I had to mention it. Philadelphia Eagles
have a new head coach, Chip Kelly. He's coming from University of Oregon, coming from a very successful program that he built over there. And he's got some quirky ways of doing things. And about a month ago, when he had his first access to the players, and I think it was like a three-day little mini camp, one of the things I thought was interesting that trickled down through the reporter grapevine is that his staff had on hand personalized shakes, after workout shakes, that were handed to the players immediately as they left the field. I thought that was very smart. Okay, so that was looked like he was going in the right direction there. So now, OTAs have started. It's 3 weeks of intense work with the team. And he has done away with both Taco Tuesdays and fast food Fridays. They're off the board.
He needs to pass that on to Andy Reid to personally cut those out.
So his philosophy is that elite athletes need elite fuel. And when the players go to the cafeteria with food that's provided, it's split into four stations. Each station describes the benefits of the food that's included in it. And it's all organic, all well-sourced.
Nice.
You know, I'm sure it's not all paleo, but hey, I think it's light years ahead of what some other people are doing. I think sometimes you hear about athletes, like popular things in the media over the past bunch of years, the Michael Phelps thing, where he was eating, you know, 10,000 calories or whatever of just pure junk food throughout the day. Adrian Peterson, the running back for the Minnesota Vikings, has talked about eating, you know, tons of crap.
Yeah, Lamar Odom, a freak.
Yeah. Like certain basketball players, you know, are addicted to candy. But I think it's great to see that in elite athletics, which is comprised of a bunch of people who can get away with a lot, right? They can get away with eating crap to a certain extent because they're moving at such a high level all the time. But the question in my mind is always, what could they accomplish if they were fueled optimally? And it looks like Chip Kelly's trying to answer that question. Nice. And I respect it. And I want to see the product they put on the football field.
Yeah, no jokes, man. I was going to make a Mike Vick joke about, well, you can imagine.
That's fine.
Distasteful.
I'm not a Vick supporter anyway, so.
No, that's great. That's awesome. Hopefully it actually helps you guys out.
Yeah, right.
You guys need it.
Yeah, I agree. But you know what? I think ultimately, years from now, I think this is going to be standard practice, right? Right.
As it should.
As it should.
If you're an elite performing athlete,
and
you should.
Especially look at the NFL and look at sports from a business perspective, okay? From an ownership perspective, guys that are paying upwards of $1 billion for some of these major franchises. If you're treating this like a business and you're providing food for your athletes, it's a joke if you would provide anything less than well-sourced food. I don't care what your dietary beliefs in. I'm not saying you have to go full-bore paleo on your players. But if you provided anything, I mean, if you were doing Taco Tuesdays and fast food Fridays, it's a joke.
Yeah.
So, again, I think a decade, two decades from now, that's going to seem silly and outdated because every player is going to have a personalized protein shake after his field workout. Every player is going to walk into the cafeteria and only be met with good options, very limited, you know, options for treats. And of course, what the players do on their own time is whatever they do on their own time. But when you're under that team's roof and you're being fed their food, better believe it should be top notch.
Build good habits too for when they do go home. No, that's great stuff.
And I don't know if I talked about it here. I just want to mention it again if I did. But one other thing that Chip Kelly's doing, he's mandating that players get 12 hours of sleep a night.
12 hours?
Yep. Now, of course, he doesn't have complete control over that either, right?
Yeah, that's
I think he's purposefully overshooting the number that maybe he wants to try to get, you know, maybe shock them so much that they'll go from 5 to 8, you know, and be doing amazing things. But I think maybe we should get, I don't know that Chip Kelly would come on our podcast, but I was going to say, I would love to talk to the guy about his logic, you know, for implementing some of these things.
That's the issue with these guys. I was watching the ESPN 30 for 30 on Chris Herron. I don't know if you know.
I absolutely do.
Yeah. I'm from the famous book Fall River Dreams. And this guy was just a ridiculous basketball legend. And he went in to play UMass after a like 12-hour cocaine binge and dropped like 36 points. So these guys are just, they can eat Taco Tuesday they could not sleep and they could still perform beyond anything I could ever dream of. But yeah, the question is, what happens when you take it to the next step? Like Walter Payton-esque, you know, that guy supposedly had the craziest workouts. Mm-hmm. You see when these elite athletes step it up a notch and take it to the next level. So I give Chip credit.
It's a fine line, right? You know, the more ridiculously gifted and endowed the athlete, the less likely they are to truly push in all facets of, you know, hey, I'm sure that they're doing crazy workouts, but maybe they're letting the food slip by the wayside because they don't have to do that, you know? But then every now and again, you see a gifted athlete put all the pieces together and the results are stunning. Like, for example, Kobe Bryant now. He's, of course, he blew his Achilles out. But before he blew his Achilles out, he's extending his career into his 30s, performing at a crazy high level.
Look at Charles. Could you imagine if Charles Barkley actually ate? I mean, I'm sure he ate terribly. Could you imagine? Horrible. I mean, he was like, sick.
To a legendary standpoint, terribly.
I mean, he's still a legend in my eyes. But, of course. Yeah, he was just a gifted, gifted athlete.
Or even take Shaquille O'Neal.
Yeah, he's another one.
Right? Early in his career, when he was youthful, he was able to, you know, probably eat whatever he wanted and stay fairly lean, right? Then, obviously, as the years have gone on, that got away from him. But if he was able to stay lean and mean into his 30s, he could extend his career by a few years and extend his peak by a few years as well.
But have you seen him dance?
I have not.
It's impressive. YouTube it. All right. Good stuff. My next one, this is a quickie. This is kind of a weird food tangible takeaway, but nonetheless, this is an article from the University of Delaware, and it's pretty interesting. This guy, Doug Talami, he's all into plants, and he ran a study basically where they went to suburban developments, and this is right in our neck of the woods, Chester County, PA, and they found that 92% of landscapes is lawn. So it's interesting when we hear ancestral health, when we heard all these people speak about sustainability and, you know, growing your own produce, there's not enough land, et cetera. But then you read something like this, 92% of people's yards are grass. So my takeaway is, you know, dig some of that up, plant your own vegetables. And he goes into saying native plants are actually healthy for the ecosystem around. They for the insects, for the animals around and whatnot, so... That's a quick and dirty takeaway.
I like it.
So check out the article. I thought it's interesting.
Dig up that grass.
Dig up that grass. All right.
All right, man. Go right into it. Caveman Corner.
Caveman Corner. So I came to a reality today as I was literally just arguing my brains out with people. I couldn't believe they're giving away free ice cream at the hospital.
And caveman doctor on a rampage.
Yeah, I said, you know, why don't you just give cigarettes away? What's the difference? Give alcohol away. I mean, we're harping on obesity and whatnot, and then we're giving away, I mean, ice cream. Come on. We can argue about the nitty-gritty and grains and all this other stuff, but ice cream, good Lord. And it just made me realize that if you care about your health, so first off, if you care about your health, you're somewhat of an outlier. If you intensely care about your health, you are definitely an outlier from society. And you know, if you're paleo or along those lines, you're really out on a ledge. You're just really
as Rob Wolf would say, the lunatic fringe.
Yeah, you really are. And I've just come to the point where it's one of those things where you are. Drop my mic. You are. You're not. And it's like if you're. Yeah, we all pretty much are. So it's kind of I'll deal with it and move on and just hope I don't get in trouble. You know, for making a voice about not having ice cream at the hospital. At that point, I realized I'm just. My line of thinking is so different than the norm. And it actually was a nice, it was a release. It was like the weight of off my shoulders here. It's just, you just kind of got to do your thing and go with it.
Yeah, man.
So, and then hearing you talk about the football players and all this other business, it's really, it's a shame what the norm has become.
You're riled up right now.
So yeah, no, I mean.
You're ready to throw down.
It's tough. It's an uphill battle. I was thinking about Rob Wolf today. It's like the guy's constantly just trying to change what's considered the norm. So it's a tough battle, but it's great that people like him have dedicated so much of their life and time for it because it just needs to change. Mm-hmm. It is out of control. Yeah. I mean, we talked last week about health. Healthcare does not equal health. And I think today was just a really good example of it. Healthcare equals free ice cream.
Yep.
Anyway, I don't want to get in trouble, so. Anyway, that is my takeaway. What do you got?
Hey, man, if you can't speak your mind on our podcast, then where can you?
Fair enough.
All right. All right, Relentless Report, I think that flows right into what I want to talk about. And we're on the same page today.
As always.
All right. I want to see more people taking initiative. Speaking of taking control of your own health, and I'm not saying you have to exist on the lunatic fringe. I'm not saying you have to go full bore 100% all the time, every day, paleo, or anything like that. I'm just saying I want to see more people take initiative and control of their own health versus listening to media sources and or people, even us, listening to people verbatim, right? I want to see more people thinking things through. And, you know, this journey is lifelong, and you and I have dedicated ourselves to the journey of improving our health and trying to keep an open mind. And we're always looking for little tweaks that we can make, different things to try to eat, factor things in, see how we feel, just constantly testing and tweaking and looking at the results. And I'm not saying you have to get as into it as maybe we do, because we probably are on the lunatic fringe, and that's okay. But, you know, don't listen to anyone verbatim. Put things into practice, think them through, sit in the driver's seat, take the wheel, and adjust course as you go. I think it's so important. And I feel like for as long as this podcast exists, I'm going to keep, you know, maybe every 20 episodes dropping that down there as my relentless report and a big takeaway.
So like the quote, I'm training for life.
Yeah.
Continue to grow, mentally and physically.
You know, it always frustrates me to see, I know some people who just come in and it's like whatever the latest mainstream news piece says is, you know, that's reality and that's what maybe he or she abides by for the next stretch of months until the next one comes out. And ultimately, it goes all over the place and things start to contradict themselves, but it's like a short-term memory, you know? You just go with whatever the rule of the day is. And that's frustrating to me.
Yep.
And the good thing is that magic workout that we talked about earlier tonight, it's a decent workout, you know? It's certainly, it's not going to hurt you. It's probably just going to help you, you know? Could you improve it? Yeah, you could improve it a little bit if you have some equipment, but it's on solid ground. But how many things that we see in the mainstream are on shaky ground, right? And if you're not thinking that stuff through, right, the fair majority. And if you're not thinking that stuff through, it's rough and it's hard to see. So that's my piece.
I like it. Episode, what was that, 44?
44.
44 in the books. Keep at it. Keep researching. Research everything we say. We link everything we say. So check it out. If you disagree, that's great.
Yeah. And you know, hey, if you disagree, send us something, right? Just like, you know, we get a lot of messages from people who are on the same page as us, and every now and again, we get something from someone who isn't, and that's completely fine by us, you know?
We just ignore it, but... All right.
All right, this man is Dr. Colin Champ. You can find him on cavemandoctor.com. You can find me on relentlessroger.com, and you can find us both on iTunes. Download the latest episode there and drop us a review if you get a chance, and we will see you for episode 45.
Have a good one.